Well, thank you, Yves, for this very nice introduction. I think it's one of the best I ever got. But also from my side, I would like to welcome you guys for this live meeting on SharePoint 2010. Let me jump straight away to the agenda that we have for today, which should be appearing over here on your screens. As you can see, we have three big areas for this live meeting, which is going to talk about, first of all, some enhancements that we have in SharePoint 2010 related to the developer productivity. And we're going to talk a little bit about the enhancements that you will benefit from as a developer. I'm also going to talk about the rich platform services and the things that have changed related to SharePoint that will allow you to write better, quicker, faster applications on top of SharePoint. And to finish off, we also need to talk about flexible deployment. It's not my goal to talk about how you can set up your SharePoint server farms, that kind of stuff, but we're going to talk about the enhancements that are related to getting your own customizations deployed to SharePoint. But as I said, first of all, let's talk about that developer productivity. First thing that is quite important to know as a SharePoint developer is the fact that in SharePoint 2010, it is possible for development purposes to install SharePoint on top of a client operating system. In SharePoint 2007, you always had to run SharePoint on top of server operating system, a Windows Server 2003 or a Windows Server 2008, something like that. That meant as a developer, you had to run a server OS on top of your laptop, usually inside virtual PC or something like that. Quite annoying, and that those problems went away or should go away with SharePoint 2010, because now it is possible to install SharePoint just on top of Windows 7 or Windows Vista. So your real development environment that you typically use to build normal applications can now also be used for developing SharePoint products. You can both run SharePoint Foundation and SharePoint Server on top of those client OSs. For the people that have never heard about SharePoint Foundation, that's like the successor of Windows SharePoint Services, and SharePoint Server is the successor of Microsoft Office SharePoint Server. The only thing that you should be aware of is the fact that you need to have a 64-bit operating system also for Windows 7 and also for Windows Vista. So it's not possible to run SharePoint on top of a 32-bit operating system. Quite obvious as well, I think it's not supported for production, just for developers. And the only supported topology that you can make use of to install SharePoint on top of Windows 7 or Vista is the standalone installation. So it's not possible to build the server farm with multiple servers on top of Windows 7, but only the standalone installation is supported. Administrators that don't like the idea about getting SharePoint deployed across all the development environments, they can disable that by group policy. And if you're planning to go this route, I recommend you to check out the installation guide that you can find in the SDK of SharePoint 2010. And there are a couple of special steps that you need to go through, but it's actually a pretty nice scenario, in my opinion. Another big improvement, in my opinion, related to developer stuff in general in SharePoint 2010 is the fact that we can now make use of some very cool templates that are available in Visual Studio 2010. For the people that have developed on top of SharePoint 2007, you probably know that to get some real work done, you need to download and be aware of quite a lot of tools, typically from CodePlex, free tools, small tools that make your developer's life a little bit easier for SharePoint 2007. That's not required anymore in SharePoint 2010 because we have those templates and those extra tools, let's say, now embedded just out of the box in Visual Studio 2010. So in Visual Studio 2010, it's possible to build, deploy, and debug your code. We've got a lot of templates to build web parts, to build business connectivity services applications, workflows, application pages, you just name it. All the work that you do, of course, in Visual Studio will be packaged into a SharePoint solution, just like we did in SharePoint 2007. That SharePoint solution can be deployed to your development environment. But that's the SharePoint solution as well that you will give to your system administrator to get your stuff deployed on your SharePoint production server. Also new in Visual Studio 2010 is the fact that we've got a server explorer that will also allow us to connect to a SharePoint environment. So you can see which sites that there are, which lists, document libraries, that kind of stuff. I didn't mention it on this slide, but a really nice improvement as well in Visual Studio is the fact that you can customize and extend Visual Studio in quite easy ways. So if you're not happy with the tooling that's available out of the box, you can go ahead and modify pretty much everything. And this is the first little demo that I would like to show you. Just a quick quick demo in Visual Studio 2010 to give you an idea how easy it is to build solutions on top of SharePoint 2010. There we go. I'm sorry for that. Over here, you should be able to see Visual Studio 2010 Beta 2. And if I go and create a new project over there, you will see just out of the box, there is a new set of templates available. If you go for the SharePoint group, you can create, for example, an empty SharePoint project. Let's call it Demo 1, like this. First of all, you get a small question in the form of this wizard where you would like to debug your SharePoint solution. This is just the URL of a local SharePoint site that I'm running over here. The next question that you will have is if you would like to deploy as a sandbox solution or a farm solution. I will come back to the concept of a sandbox solution later on in my talk. Just for now, I will go for the farm solution. That's the stuff that you know from SharePoint 2007. This is my empty SharePoint project. What I can do now is I can choose to add a new item. So I can show you the item templates that we've got. And we'll have, for example, a template for a web part, for a workflow, for an application page, an event receiver, a module content types, you name it. For pretty much everything that you can build as a developer in SharePoint, you will have a template for that in Visual Studio. In my opinion, one of the nice additions in Visual Studio 2010 related to SharePoint is as well the introduction of the visual web part, which will allow you to build a web part in a visual way with drag and drop full designer support from Visual Studio in SharePoint 2007. The only official way to build a web part was to completely do that in code as a server control. Now let me quickly show you how easy it is if I go and build an easy web part. Like this. We will see the item gets added to my solution in Visual Studio, to the project over there, including some features, of course, to get my stuff deployed. Let me switch straight away into the design mode to make use, of course, of the designer. So if I switch to my toolbox, and just like you can build any ASP.NET web page, in a second, and there we go. We see controls popping up. Let's just grab, for simplicity, maybe just a button. And when the button is dragged and dropped, I can set some properties. For example, I can set the text property when Visual Studio is done loading. For example, let's say click me. You probably know if you double-click on such a control, the default event handler is created for you in the code behind. So here I can type maybe button1.text is equal to I was clicked, like this. Let's build my code. Of course, not a very exciting project. But anyway, what is the result? Well, as you can see in my project, I've got a feature. I've got my visual web part, the user control that is added. What I can do is I can also show you over here the package designer. This is actually a view on top of your SharePoint solution. See, in my solution, I've got my feature that contains my easy web part. If I don't like the feature over here in my solution, I can take it away. I can add it back. And behind the scenes, all that ugly XML that you typically had to write yourself is now generated for you. To get this thing deployed, I can just right-click in Visual Studio, go to Deploy. You will see over here in the stages bar at the bottom all the deployment steps that Visual Studio is doing. Deploy succeeded already. So if I now switch back to my SharePoint site, and let's first of all do a refresh of the page over there. It's going to take a couple of seconds because of the fact that if you deploy a solution, the application pool gets recycled. So you have to wait a couple of seconds before your page will actually load again. But when that is done, we will see that we can just add the web part to my page. If I switch the page in edit mode, let's add it over here. If I go to the insert tab to insert a new web part from the custom group, remember I've got my easy web part. Let's add it. There we go, with the very exciting click me button. And if I save the page, if I click on the button, of course we will see that the code gets executed. Just to give you an idea how easy it is to go through that entire cycle, writing code, deploying code locally with the help of Visual Studio, it's actually pretty easy. Let me switch back to my presentation. This is the stuff that I already mentioned. In Visual Studio 2010, we've got support for pretty much everything that you can do in SharePoint. Some stuff that is mentioned on the slides will be discussed later on in this presentation as well. So let's continue. That's my demo. Another tool that we need to talk about is the SharePoint Designer. Now I know the SharePoint Designer 2007 was not a very popular tool for SharePoint 2007 for a typical developer, because also in my opinion it was quite limiting. And one of the issues that we had in SharePoint Designer 2007 was the fact that if you did some work over there, it was always scoped to a very specific list or to a very specific site, and there were no easy ways, and in many, many cases, no ways at all to actually get your SharePoint customizations deployed from maybe your development server to your production server. Well, those issues have been removed in SharePoint Designer 2010. So it's really a tool that can be used by non-developers as developers, in my opinion. You can do some very cool stuff with the SharePoint Designer. You can still build workflows, master pages, web art pages, just like you could do in the SharePoint Designer 2007. But we've got some extra functionality, and SharePoint Designer really can be seen as a rich client to customize your SharePoint sites. So you, in the SharePoint Designer, for example, you can also build new lists. You can customize lists by setting all the settings without going back to the web user interface of SharePoint, if you want to. Another very big, important new announcement inside the SharePoint Designer as well is the fact that if you've done some work and you hit the limitations of the SharePoint Designer, you would like to extend SharePoint with really some custom code that you built in Visual Studio, well, what you can do is you can take the work that you've done with the SharePoint Designer, export it to Visual Studio, and continue your customization over there. So it's not a limiting factor anymore in the SharePoint Designer that if you hit the limitation, you have to redo all your work in Visual Studio. No, you can just continue doing your work. Very quick demo, once again, of the SharePoint Designer. I already opened up that thing over here. There we go. This is the SharePoint Designer. I just opened up my site. You can see some key information about this site, like the address, the version, how much storage that is used. Straight away you can start customizing settings. You can see which lists and document libraries that are created, that kind of stuff. Maybe let me just show you very quickly some announcements related to the workflow designer that we've got in the SharePoint Designer. So what I can do maybe is I can choose to create a new reusable workflow over here. Let's say the demo workflow. Let's hit OK. Reusable workflows is a new concept in the SharePoint Designer. It's like a workflow that you build for not a list or a document library specifically, but for the site in general, that can be applied very quickly, as we will see in a second, to any list or document library. This is my new designer. I can click over here and insert some conditions by making use of the ribbon that is available in the SharePoint Designer. Now to simplify this process, you can also start typing over here. And the SharePoint designer is going to propose some of the conditions in this case that are available. For example, I can just check if the current item field equals value. Let's say if the title field maybe contains a specific important value. Let's go for a weekend. Then maybe we would like to do some actions. Once again, I could pick any of the actions that are available in the SharePoint designer, or I can just start to type the name of an action. Say we're going to send an email to myself in this case. Say weekend email. Another new thing in this activity or this action that you probably still recognize from SharePoint 2007 is the fact that we can now do formatting. So if you would like to format email messages, that is very well possible. Okay, so far so good. Let me publish this very basic workflow. You can see that it gets saved back to SharePoint. While this thing is saving, I'm already going to start my mail server because I would like to show you the email message that gets sent. So far, so good. Now let me navigate, for example, in my SharePoint site to this announcement list. And inside this announcement list, I'm going to navigate to my list settings to associate the workflow that I just created. Workflow settings. See over here, I've got my demo workflow. That was the one that I created inside the SharePoint designer. Let's start this automatically when an item is created, whatever. Now we will see if I go and create a new announcement inside this list. Say, this is a weekend test. Let's click save. The workflow should get started, and if I open up Outlook in the meanwhile, hopefully we will see that email arriving. I'm refreshing my page over here. See, my demo workflow has been completed. And let's switch to Outlook. And there we go. We've got that weekend email with the formatted message that is arriving. Okay, of course there's much more to show inside the SharePoint designer, but time is limited today, so let's already continue. So I'm switching back to my presentation and let's continue with the next slide. Okay, another pretty cool addition from the point of view of a developer in SharePoint 2010 is a thing that's called the developer dashboard. The developer dashboard is actually a functionality that is just available in the web UI of SharePoint that will give you some relevant information about the page that is currently loaded inside your browser. In that developer dashboard, for example, you will see the entire page trace with statistics about times related to connecting to databases, loading web parts, that kind of stuff. So it's a very useful piece of information for developers to see what's happening on a page, what is a slow process, and that kind of stuff. Now, the developer dashboard is very easy to enable. You can do that very quickly by making use of a PowerShell. You can do that with PowerShell, but the thing that I've put on my slide is just with SDS ADM. You need to set a property with the name developer dashboard. And there are three values that you can set. You can set it to on, or you can set it to off. If you set it to off, of course, it's not available. If you set it to on, it's always available. But the more interesting value, in my opinion, is on demand. So it will be possible to make use of the developer dashboard when you need it. So let me quickly show you how that's going to work in a demo. I'm going to open up a command prompt. Here, and let me copy the code snippet to actually enable the developer dashboard. Okay, so I set the property with the name developer dashboard and I set the value to on demand. In a second, hopefully we will see the message that everything went okay. And when that is done, I can refresh my page in the web UI of SharePoint to show you the result over there. So far so good. So if I refresh my page, there you go. You will see at the top right of the page this very small icon. What is going to happen? Well, when you click on that icon, that's actually the icon of the developer dashboard. If you click on it, at first sight, nothing special is going to happen. The page gets reloaded. But if you scroll now to the bottom, you will see all the information about the developer dashboard. See, this is the entire request split up and the different events on the page. You can see which queries that are executed on the database, which were slow queries. And this is also very interesting information for web part developers at the bottom over here. You can see how much time your web part actually took to load. For example, my web part took the onload event of my web part took 14 milliseconds, and the on pre-render of the easy web part took 200 milliseconds. Actually, the onload only took 0.14 milliseconds, so quite quick. Of course, there's not a lot of code in that. So the developer dashboard in this site can now be enabled by just clicking on this little icon over here. Okay, let me switch back. So far for the developer productivity, important things to remember. You can run SharePoint on top of a client OS, and we've got very good support inside Visual Studio 2010 to support us as a SharePoint developer. The next set of functionality that we need to talk about is all related to what they call rich platform services. And probably the first thing that already came to your attention when I showed you my SharePoint 2010 site is the fact that SharePoint has a complete new user interface that is introducing the ribbon also in the web user interface of SharePoint. The ribbon is probably a thing that you're familiar with from Office 2007. SharePoint 2007 was not yet making use of it, but now we've got full ribbon support for all lists, items, sites inside the web user interface even. That ribbon is going to allow us to make use of pretty nice functionality called multi-select and multi-actions, which will basically allow you to select multiple items in a list or in a document library and apply actions to that selection. For example, in SharePoint 2007, it was quite annoying if you had to check out like 10 documents. You had to click checkout like 10 times. Now you can just do that with a couple of mouse clicks with the multi-select and multi-actions. Inline edit is functionality that will allow you to make modifications to list items, for example, without navigating to a special page for doing that, but just inline in the view that you're viewing. And that's an option that you can also enable. Very quick, of course, to show off. If I switch back to my desktop, I just can navigate to my SharePoint site over here. You will see if I would like to modify this page, I can just click over here, the edit button. And then you will see straight away some new tabs will appear on my ribbon to allow me to do formatting. And just like in Office 2007, you've got live preview over here. So if you hover over some formatting options, you will see that the page is dynamically going to change without actually making that selection. Another very nice thing about ribbon is the fact that it's context sensitive. For example, if I select over here this image at the right hand side, you can see that another tab in picture tools is going to appear, the design tab in which I can select the URL of my image. I can upload another image from my computer. I can change image styles, stuff like that. So it's a very nice experience, I think, for people using, in this case, the SharePoint site. Let me also show you that multi-select thing that I was talking about. For example, if I navigate to this task list, if I create a bunch of tasks, or a bunch of tasks, just a couple of tasks. And notice that in front of every task item, in this case, you have those checkboxes. You also have a select all checkbox that will allow you to make those selections. And now it is possible, for example, for all those tasks to delete them at once, or if those were documents, I could check out those documents, that kind of stuff. This is also new in SharePoint 2010. Okay, let me quickly switch back to my presentation. I didn't mention it explicitly, but of course, as a developer, you have opportunities to extend the ribbon, add your own custom controls to the ribbon, add your own custom tabs to the ribbon. That is all supported in SharePoint 2010. Some other new UI elements that are pretty nice, I think, is the first one is called the status bar, which is used to display information about the page that you're editing or the page that you're modifying. And there is also a very small notification area at the right-hand side of the screen. Maybe you already saw that popping up. So this status bar, for example, is going to display the status of a page checked out or saved as a minor version, something like that. Notification area is a small pop-up that will be shown when you will actually save the page, when the checkout action is done, that kind of stuff. Also, the dialog framework, completely new. That's probably a thing that you just noticed in my demo already. It will allow you to modify, add SharePoint content without leaving actually your page. Let me very quickly show you those things in the web user interface as well. So if I navigate to my SharePoint site, let me navigate to the home page. There we go. First of all, if I navigate to my, or better, if I click on this edit button, you will see at the right-hand side the loading message appearing. If I save my page, you will see the saving message very briefly appearing. I hope that is clear in the live meeting. That was the notification that I was talking about. The dialog that I was talking about is going to happen, for example, if you choose to add a new item to this task list. If you do so, you will see this is really a dialog that is sitting on top of my page, which I can move around. I can maximize this dialog, I can restore it, that kind of stuff. What is the advantage of this dialog? Well, this dialog is going to allow me, in this case, to add content to this SharePoint task list without leaving this page. If this page would be using a special sorting, formatting, or if I would be at a very specific location related to scrolling, that information, that context would be stored, which is, in my opinion, also a very, very nice addition. Once again, for all the things that I just showed you, well, those things can be customized as developers. It is possible to build your own new dialogues. There's an entire dialog framework that you can make use of as a developer. You can build your own notifications. You can build your own status bar messages, that kind of stuff. It's all supported. Okay. The next set of enhancements important for developers in SharePoint 2010 are related to the very important concept called lists. You probably know in SharePoint you actually store data in lists and in document libraries. Already in SharePoint 2007 you could do quite some cool stuff with lists and document libraries. And remember the introduction of the new versioning scheme, the forced checkout, for example, lookup columns, that kind of stuff was already available in the previous version of SharePoint. But this set of functionality has been extended, I think, quite a bit. First thing that is worthwhile to notice is the fact that SharePoint 2010 is now supporting what they call relationships with cascading or blocking deletes. You probably still remember in SharePoint 2007, you already had the lookup column that allowed you to create a very basic relationship between two lists. but there was absolutely no referential integrity in place. So you could delete a parent item without affecting your child items. And now in SharePoint 2010, it is possible to specify whenever, for example, a child item, sorry, whenever, for example, a parent item gets deleted, only allow that if there are no child items related anymore, that kind of stuff. Also, it is possible to do extra validation on the list items or on the columns with formulas that you probably know from Excel. Validation support in SharePoint 2007 out of the box was very limited. The only things usually that you could select was, is the field required or not? And for number fields, you could specify the minimum value and maximum values. New in SharePoint 2010 is the fact that for columns that you add, you can specify custom validation. For example, if the column is equal to this value, then it is not okay, that kind of stuff. New in SharePoint 2010 as well is the fact that you can now create lookup columns that will actually do a lookup to multiple columns in your parent list. So very basically said, you can join data coming from multiple lists. I will show you that in a second because it's a pretty nice scenario. List indexing is still available in SharePoint 2010, but now you can actually allow SharePoint to manage the creation of indexes based on how the user is actually going to work with your data. So that's the auto creation of the indexes. And all of this functionality, of course, is related to scalability and performance. And in that area, there is also a new enhancement, which is called the list query throttling. An administrator can specify that if in the case that you've got lots of data in a specific list that is retrieved by a user, that query retrieving those millions and millions of rows, for example, will be blocked. That's of course important to not bring down the performance of your SharePoint environment. As I said, all the stuff that is available in SharePoint 2007, we still have that of course in SharePoint 2010. Okay, let me switch back to my desktop to show you a couple of things that you can accomplish. For example, in this SharePoint site, what I can do is I can choose to create a new list. Hopefully I can create a new list. Let's look for the custom list template. Here's my custom list. Let's create a list called customers. And in this list, I can create, for example, an additional column. For example, let's say for every customer, it's important to know the country. I can go for a single line of text. Okay. And let's create another column. Let's say for every customer, it's important to know the code, which is also a single line of text. And notice that if you make use of this column, and there's a new section that you can apply, column validation. And in that column validation, you can type, for example, the length of this column should be equal to 5, if every customer code should be equal to 5, and that kind of stuff. And you can even define the message that should be displayed when this validation went wrong. I'm not going to do that for the sake of my demo. So let me just enter some customers. Let's say you two from Belgium. New to you. And let's say we've got a customer called Microsoft from the States. And that's the code. So far, nothing special related to this list. But now let me create another list. Let me go for another custom list on this site. And let's say we have, a timesheets list. Create. And let's create a column. Maybe I would like to have the hours column over here, which is a number. Okay. And let's say every timesheet is related to a specific customer. So I have a customer column that is a lookup. Okay. And I'm going to do a lookup to my customers column that I just created. And I'm going to display the title. So far, This was already possible to do in SharePoint 2007. New in SharePoint 2010 is that we can choose to display besides the title column, let's say also the country and the code column. And over here, very interesting, we can choose to enforce the relationship behavior. And I'm going to make use of a restrict delete. And I'm going to show you in a second the consequence of this action. But I'm going to enable that index. Let me show you the result already. If I create a new timesheet, let's say for Jan, who has worked 10 hours for Microsoft, let's click save. As you can see, the list item gets created. There's a lookup to my Microsoft customer, but from the Microsoft customer, we also see that the relevant information, in this case, the country and the code, is being displayed. So this is actually a view that joins data from, in this case, the timesheet list and the customers list. Not possible to accomplish without writing custom code in SharePoint 2007. The other thing that I can show you, if I now navigate to my customers list, if I would try to delete Microsoft, let's say delete item, there we go. As you can see, I've got an error that is going to tell me, well, it's not possible to delete this customer because in timesheets there is still an item that's related to this customer. So that was the restrict delete option that was in place. Okay. Of course, everything that I showed you related to those lists can also be applied to document libraries. Another very cool new component in SharePoint 2010, which is actually the successor of the popular business data catalog in SharePoint 2007. It's called Business Connectivity Services, or BCS. And very basically said, BCS will allow you to bring in external data in SharePoint 2010. Think about, for example, if you have a SQL database with some interesting data and you would like to consume that data in SharePoint. You could already do that in SharePoint 2007 by creating in the BDC an application definition that would allow you to visualize that information inside SharePoint WebArts. Well, that is still possible to do in SharePoint 2010 with business connectivity services. But now in SharePoint 2010, it's also possible to enable what they call write back. So it is possible to have that visualization option in SharePoint that will allow you to modify the information and the backend data source as well. And SharePoint 2007 and the BDC was read only. Another thing that's worthwhile to notice is that BCS is part of SharePoint Foundation, while BDC in SharePoint 2007 was part of Microsoft Office SharePoint Server. And now the core functionality in BCS is available without paying that expensive license for a SharePoint Server in this case. What's the story? How is it going to work? Well, to be able to make use of BCS, first thing that you do is create what they call an external content type. And that external content type can be compared more or less with, let's say, your application definition file from SharePoint 2007 BDC. Once you have defined that external content type, you can consume that data in a thing that's called an external list. And that external list is actually a view on your content. And then once you've got your content in that external list, you can visualize it with the web parts, just like you can do inside SharePoint 2007. A very quick demo about this one. Okay. Now in SharePoint 2007, the only tool that Microsoft gave you to build those application definition files for business data catalog was Notepad, which is not, of course, very nice to build XML. Now we can build our external content types completely in the SharePoint Designer tool. Very easy to do. This is still my workflow, so let's switch to the SharePoint Designer. Over here, I can see all the external content types that are available for me, which are probably none. But I can create a new external content type, and I'm going to give you a very quick demo that will actually get data from a database that I'm running on my server. I've got a database with products, so let's create a new external content type which is named products, and let's connect to the Nordwine database, where there is the products table over here. And what I can do for this products table, I can right click on top of it and create all the relevant operations to read a specific item, to read all the items, to create a product, to update a product, and to delete a product. So let's do that. Okay, let's display, for example, the product name and the picker. And let's display the, I don't know, maybe unit in stock and the picker as well. Let's click next. I'm not going to define any filters, that would take us too far, but let's just click finish. And let's just save this external content type. And by the way, this external content type, as I mentioned, is now connecting to my SQL Server database. This could be a WCF service, or this could be a .NET data type as well. If you're exposing line of business information through a .NET class, BCS can also connect to that .NET class. Anyway, let's try to make use of this information over here in my SharePoint site. In my SharePoint site, I'm going to create a new external list. Let's say the Nordwine products list. I can pick my external content type that I would like to make use of. In my demo, it's well very easy because I only defined one external content type. This could be a longer list, of course. Let's hit OK. And let's hit create. And when this new external list gets created, hopefully we will see some real data coming from the Nordwine products database. See, this is data that in this case is coming from my database. This is data from SQL Server. As you can see, I can just pick one of my products and I can choose to edit, for example, this product. For example, I can rename this one to Chai Test or whatever. And let's click Save. And if I would actually go to the database, I would see that this product is updated in the database as well. So we have full write-back support. Once again, it is possible to customize this list like any normal SharePoint list, create additional views, that kind of stuff. You can show this information in web parts. You can also join this list with a lookup column with other lists that is all supported, which is a pretty cool functionality. Final advantage that you will have with BCS compared to the BDC in SharePoint 2007 is the fact that if you want to, you can also take this data and connect this data to Outlook to have offline access, for example. And it is even possible to map, in this case, the entities that you know from Outlook to your external content types as well. So if you have, for example, a database with contact persons, something like that, you can surface those contact persons as real contacts in Outlook by making use of external lists and external content types inside SharePoint 2010. Okay, let me switch back to my presentation. I hope you guys are still following. As you can see, it's quite a lot of new stuff that's important to know about as developers in SharePoint 2010. Also this one, in SharePoint 2010, views that you create for lists and document libraries are using XSLT. There is still CAML used, if you remember SharePoint 2007. In SharePoint 2007, everything was CAML, but now CAML is only used to execute queries. It's going to result in better performance, and it's going to result in better customization opportunities for you guys as developers, because it's will just plain XSLT. And you don't have to dive into all the details related to CAML anymore to build custom views from code. Okay, so at this point in time, we discussed the thing that's being displayed over here in the center. Let me do it like this. The data platform. So in the data platform, we've got some enhancements related to list data, external lists, site, stuff like that. Just like in SharePoint 2007, SharePoint is offering you a couple of APIs that you can make use of to actually access that data in your own applications as well. For example, just like in SharePoint 2007, we've got over here the server object model. And the server object model is basically an assembly that you can add a reference to inside your own application that will allow you to access SharePoint data inside that application. Now, just like in SharePoint 2007, the server object model can only be accessed on the server. So that means if you make use of this server object model, that application that references the server object model must be executed on your SharePoint server. It is not possible to access that that application remotely from a network client, let's say. But in SharePoint 2010, this limitation has been lifted, let's say, because besides the server object model, we also have a new thing, which is the client object model. And the client object model is going to allow you to connect to SharePoint data by making use of an object model also on network clients. So it is possible, for example, to build a, I don't know, maybe a Silverlight application that can be executed on your clients that will get data from our SharePoint server. Besides both the server object model and the client object model, and some other new things that are related to accessing data by writing code, there is now a new link to SharePoint provider that will allow you to build link queries and get data from SharePoint by just building a real link query, like link to XML or link to SQL, for example. And finally, on top, we've got a complete REST API that we can make use of to access our SharePoint data in a RESTful manner. So it is possible to consume SharePoint data and quite a lot of different applications that are also communicating over REST. Now, a very quick demo that I would like to show you how easy it is to make use of the client object model. The client object model comes in three flavors that you can make use of in three, let's say, types of applications. There is a version of the client-side object model for .NET applications, for example, a Windows application or a WPF application. There is a version of the client-side object model for JavaScript, and there is a version of the client-side object model for a Silverlight as well. So it is possible to build a Silverlight app that will connect through the client OM through your SharePoint data. Now, for the simplicity of my demo, I'm just going to create a very basic console application. Over here in my console application to show you a couple of things that you can do by making use of the client's object model. So the first thing that I'm going to do in this console application is I'm going to add a reference to the client-side object model. Once Visual Studio is done, yeah. And we can find the client-side object model in our SharePoint root. You know, the SharePoint root is what we used to call the 12 hive in SharePoint 2007. So you still remember probably program files, common files, Microsoft shared, web server extensions, 14. And over there we can go to the bin folder and we can find Microsoft, oops, not the bin folder, ISAP. And we can find Microsoft.SharePoint.Client and Microsoft.SharePoint.Client.Runtime. That are the two assemblies from the client-side object model for .NET applications. And you've got Silverlight assemblies as well for your Silverlight applications. Okay, let me just show you a couple of basic code snippets. And first of all, I'm going to make use of a data context. If everything is okay, I should have IntelliSense over here. Oh, it's not data context. My mistake, it's client context. Okay. And when you create new client context, you can specify the URL of the site that you would like to connect to. And I'm just going to grab the URL of the site that I'm using for my demos, like this. And if you're used to work with the server-side object model in SharePoint 2007, well, you will recognize for some stuff for sure. You know, in SharePoint 2007, we had classes like SPSite, SPWeb, SPList, SPListItem, that kind of stuff. Well, in the client-side object models, those classes are still available with pretty much the same functionality, but they dropped the SP prefix. So I can now have, for example, the web class, which corresponds with the SPWeb from the server. I can get from my context the web, for example. Now, it's important to understand that the client object models are built by keeping in mind two design goals. First of all, performance. So it should be possible to build very performant, very quick applications. And secondly, consistency. So as already mentioned, the classes that you still know from the object model on the server are still applicable on the client. But performance, what is that all about? Well, performance can be accomplished by trying to do two things. First of all, you can try to limit the information that is sent over the wire. And the second thing that you can do is try to limit the amount of requests that you are going to make to connect to your server. SharePoint is only going to connect using the client object model to your server if you make use of the method called execute query. So only on this line of code we will actually connect to our server. And we can specify what data that we're interested in by making use, in this case, of the load method. So I can specify, well, please load over here information related to my web. If you have multiple things that you're interested in, what you can do is you can say, well, I have a list, and that is my web.lists.getList by title. For example, the customers list, and I can specify, well, please load me that list as well. Okay. Very important to understand, when we call the execute query, we will actually retrieve information from the SharePoint site. So we will make the request, and now I can do something like this, console.writeline, let's say the web.title, and let's say console.writeline, maybe the list.title as well, and the list.itemCount, and at the end let's do a console.readline. So we can actually see the result. Let me execute this code. Whoops. Oh, that's actually very good. I forgot to make a small change. I'm going to change my platform to any CPU. In this build of SharePoint, you need to do that to get it to work. Oh, still not. And probably I forgot to set the .NET version to .NET 3.5. Yeah, SharePoint 2010 is still using .NET 3.5. So if I fix those issues, I should be able to execute my application. Okay, there we go. As you can see, we get the information from SharePoint. The title of the site is being displayed. The list of the customers is being the title of the customers list is being displayed, and we've got two customers. Now, remember what I mentioned related to the design goals of the object model. One of the design goals was performance, good performance. And the code that I wrote so far is not very good in this way, because at this point in time, both for my web variable and my list variable, all the information, every single property is retrieved. Although in my code further on, I only make use of the titles and the item count property. What can you do to optimize this? Well, it is possible to specify, for example, for my web, I'm only interested in the title of my website, and in the list I'm only interested in the list title and let's say in the list.itemCount. So if I execute this code, the result will be exactly the same. But if you would measure the amount of data that is now sent from your client, from your server to your client, it's much less, because for the web only the title is transferred, and for the list only the title and the item count. And I can actually prove that to you, that this is really working. If I would remove, for example, the item count property from the list of properties to load for my list, see, I still reference it over here at the bottom. If I would execute my code, we would get an exception. I see the exception is property or field not initialized, our code is not going to work anymore at this point in time. Just a quick demo of some things that you can do by making use of the server object model, the client object model, of course. I could show you much more stuff like editing data, adding data, modifying list document libraries, that is all supported. To open SharePoint sites and pages. I'm thinking about the scenario that he is describing. It's like adding a link to that to that developer dashboard.
I'm in a chat with him, so maybe he can reply.
Well, I can already mention what is possible to do as a developer. It is possible to add your own information from your custom code. For example, if you have some processes that you would like to measure in time, you can add, let's say, markers in your code that will also be represented in the developer dashboard. I don't know if that was his question.
Mirko? It's about debugging 2007 sites.
Oh, on SharePoint 2007?
Yes.
Oh, no. No, this is 2010, so no 2007.
Okay. Then his second question is about the client OM.
Mm-hmm.
What if you create a loop or a bug, and if you fire that away to the server via the client OM,
mm-hmm.
can you then pull down the server?
You will not be able to completely bring down your SharePoint server, but you will be able to put a very high load on your SharePoint server. SharePoint has some built-in mechanisms to block certain parts of the API when there is a very high load. And that's probably a thing that will happen when you put a very high load on your server, that the API that you're using will be shut off to avoid that the normal web pages will not work anymore. So bringing down the server, no, but you can put a very high load on the server, that is true.
Okay, so Mirko says here that the client OM, it's not something that a system administrator would want in his production environment.
Well, I do think this is interesting to have even in your production environment. Let me explain as well that system administrators can choose to put additional settings on those APIs related to performance. So if they want to, they can limit the amount of resources that are assigned to those APIs. And I don't think there is any issue related to performance or exposure, let's say. In SharePoint 2007, we already had the out-of-the-box web services that were always enabled, in which you can do the same stuff. So I don't see any issues over there.
Okay. If anyone else has any more questions, I'd say don't hesitate to use the Q&A box on top of your screen. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Even more improvements now to the eventing mechanism in SharePoint 2010. You probably know you can build event handlers for pretty much everything that happens in SharePoint, already in SharePoint 2007. Now we have even more events in SharePoint 2010. For example, when websites are created, when lists are created, that kind of stuff. And we will have better templates in Visual Studio that will allow us to write code for all those events. And now it's even possible as a developer to make use of custom error pages. One of the issues in SharePoint 2007 with the synchronous events was the fact that you could, as a developer, display just a error message if you would like to cancel a certain event but it was always displayed as a very ugly page. Now it is possible to build your own custom error page to display that information in a nicer way, let's say to the user. Improvement in lists as well, in events as well. Then some improvements related to building workflows as developers. As you can see, it's a very long list of all bullet points. I'm not going to discuss every single bullet point with you guys. I'm just going to pick some of them. For example, in Visual Studio 2010, support for building workflows has been improved quite a bit. We still have that workflow designer, which is displayed over here in this screenshot at the right-hand side. New in that designer is that we've got templates for initiation and association forms. I don't know how many of you have built custom initiation and association forms for workflows in SharePoint 2007. If you've done that, you will know that this is a lot of work to get up and running, and now this is very easy to do in SharePoint 2010. Because all the plumbing code, let's say, it's generated for you, which is actually pretty nice. If you have built a workflow inside the SharePoint Designer, like I did in one of my first demos, it is possible to import that workflow inside Visual Studio. And we can now build site workflows, as I showed you. We have reusable declarative workflows, and that was my demo in the SharePoint Designer as well. Another very cool thing that you can do, if you're not happy with the out-of-the-box workflows, for example, the very popular out-of-the-box approval workflow, it is possible to customize those out-of-the-box workflows as well, even if you just make use of the SharePoint Designer. Let me just very quickly show you how that is going to work. If I switch back to my desktop, over here, this is the SharePoint Designer. Remember, let me go to workflows. This is the workflow that I created in one of my first demos. Let's say you're not happy with the out-of-the-box approval workflow. What you can do is you can right-click on it and you can choose to copy and modify this workflow so you can completely tune it to your needs. In SharePoint 2007, if you would like to customize the out-of-the-box approval workflow, you basically had to recreate it inside Visual Studio. Now you can have, for example, an additional condition, for example, if, I don't know, a specific item is of a specific value, and only then, let's say, we're going to ask for approval. So you can build like, if the order amount is bigger than 500, then we ask for approval, otherwise we will just approve straight away. Okay, so it's that easy to accomplish. Let me switch back to my slide deck. New concept, which is important for system administrators, but important to know about as developers, is the introduction of a thing that's called service applications. And once again, you can think about service applications as version next of, in this case, the shared service provider infrastructure of SharePoint 2007. In SharePoint 2007, you could have shared service providers that would encapsulate components like Excel services, user profiles, search, that kind of stuff. We still have all those components of those shared service providers as service applications in SharePoint 2010, but now you can choose per individual component to assign them, in this case, to different web applications. SharePoint 2007, you could only make use of one shared service provider per web application, which is quite limiting. Now in SharePoint 2010, you can mix and match as you want. You can still make use of the model that we had in 2007, but it's much more flexible from the IT pro point of view. And it is even possible to consume service applications that are coming from older server farms, maybe even farms that are sitting in the cloud and not hosted in your own environment on premise. But maybe from SharePoint Online, something like that. So it's a very flexible model, which will allow you to scale out SharePoint in a very flexible way. Also from the point of view of developers, nice to know that if you ever want to extend this, it's also possible. I don't think a lot of companies will actually do this, but technically speaking, it is possible to build as a developer your own service application. SilverLight 3, is probably a thing that you know about as a developer already, as the technology to build rich rich internet applications. SQLite 3 is used out of the box in SharePoint 2010 and already quite a lot of situations. For example, there is the media player web part. There's an out-of-the-box SQLite web part that will allow you to host any SQLite application inside a web part. Also, if you create a new item inside, if you create a new list or a new site, that dialog that is being shown is also a SQLite application. And of course, SQLite and SharePoint in general play along very, very well. I already mentioned that there is the client object model that you can make use of in SQLite. The REST APIs can be consumed in SQLite applications, and it's even possible to display a SQLite application that is remotely hosted inside your SharePoint sites as well. Now, very quick demo of a couple of things where you can make use of SQLite in SharePoint. I already mentioned, if you go over here, if you create stuff in SharePoint, the thing that you're looking at this point in time is a SQLite application. If you right-click on it, you can actually see this is really SQLite. I don't know if this will be visible on live meeting, but if you click on the different types and the different filters, if it get actually a pretty nice animation that will show all the different items, all the different templates that are available. Another thing that I can show you, which is pretty cool in my opinion, we already talked about workflow. And workflow in SharePoint 2010 can be visualized by making use of a tool that's called Visio Services. Visio Services, very basically said, will allow you to visualize a Visio diagram in a web page. And Visio Services, to accomplish that, is making use of SQLite. And Visio Services in context of workflow is used to visualize workflows. For example, the out-of-the-box workflow, out-of-the-box workflows are actually doing this. What I'm going to do, I'm just going to navigate over here to, let's say, this task list. And I'm going to associate the out-of-the-box approval workflow to this task list. Let's just call it demo. Let's automatically start the workflow when the task is created. I could do this trick in any list or any document library. Okay, let's say we have a serial approval. First, we're going to have the approval of the trainer, and then we're going to have the approval of, let's say, Jan. Oops. This is a known issue, no worries. Let me quickly try to do this again. Workflow settings. Let's go for the approval demo. It's whatever. And now very carefully, let's try to click on save. There we go. I just wanted to have a workflow associated with this task list. So let's go over here and let's start my workflow on this task list. The demo work, on this task. So what I'm going to show you is how SharePoint can actually visualize this this workflow. This would be a good time for additional questions. It's usually taking a couple of seconds.
Unfortunately, none, but I would say if you have questions, it's right now to ask them.
Okay, in the meanwhile, I'm going to click on the in progress link for this workflow. In SharePoint 2007, we would see the boring information page, getting information from the history list. Now in a second, we will see a rich visualization in Silverlight about the state of this workflow instance, I actually have to say. Ah, there you go. See, first we've got, I can actually zoom in a little bit if you want. See, we've got the item for approval assigned to the trainer, and we've got an item for approval assigned to Jan. If the trainer is going to do the approval, you would see a checkbox appearing over here. So this is a very visual indication about well, the state of your workflow instance. So this is a Silverlight application. As you can see, it's very interactive. Just as an example where Silverlight is used out of the box in SharePoint 2010. That's actually a very good question. My idea is that the vision of Microsoft is to be able to make use of SharePoint Workspace as really a standalone application, which is not integrated in your typical Outlook connected to Exchange. So even if there is no connection to Exchange, if you don't have the opportunity to run Outlook, you can still make use of SharePoint Workspace. I have to admit, there is a certain overlap in functionality. You can have SharePoint data available in Outlook, also offline. You can have the same thing in SharePoint Workspace. The thing where SharePoint Workspace will shine is when you go and customize your SharePoint sites, those customizations will not always end up in Outlook, but they will end up inside the SharePoint Workspace. So that's the story over there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. So we discussed the rich platform services, all the options that we had over there, and we're going to finish off by talking about the flexible deployment options. And I can assure you guys that everything that you know about deployment in SharePoint 2007, when we're talking about getting your own customizations deployed, is still applicable. So if you build SharePoint solutions in SharePoint 2007 as you should, it's still the same in SharePoint 2010. With a couple of nice touches, and the first enhancement related to SharePoint solutions is a thing that's called sandbox solutions. And the idea behind the sandbox solution is the fact that it is possible now with sandbox solutions to get a solution deployed to the level of a site collection. In SharePoint 2007, your solutions always had to be deployed to the level of your SharePoint server farm. You need to have administrative privileges to accomplish this. You need to have typically a system administrator with physical access to the server, needed to execute SDS ADM operations. Now it is possible to do that on the level of your site collection, and you only need to have site collection administrator privileges. So no box admin or server admin privileges anymore in SharePoint. Of course, security is very important. But rest assured that all the code that gets deployed by making use of this mechanism will run in a sandbox, and that sandbox is not going to allow the code to do a lot of stuff. For example, it is not possible to connect to databases, web services, to the object model to do run with elevated privileges, for example. So the functionality is really in the sandbox, and you can be sure that all the code that gets deployed through that sandbox is safe to be deployed. Also, administrators once again have opportunities to guarantee stability. That means that they can assign resources to different SharePoint sites, and it's possible to monitor the sandbox solutions, how many resources that they're consuming. So if there is a sandbox solution that is consuming too much resources, administrators will have opportunities to disable them so that they will not have an impact on the performance of your SharePoint server anymore. Very quickly, how are sandbox solutions going to work? Let me go back to Visual Studio. In Visual Studio, if you create a new project and you go for the SharePoint project template, Let's call it sandbox demo. Let's click OK. You get that question, and you can choose what type of solution that you want to build, a farm solution or a sandbox solution. This is the SharePoint 2007 traditional solution. This is the new thing that I've been talking about, so let's make use of this one. Okay, and I'm very quickly going to add just the basic dummy web part to this solution. And let's say in render contents, I'm just going to do writer.write, I'm alive. Okay, and let's build my code. Now what I could do is I could right click in Visual Studio and click deploy, get the sandbox solution deployed automatically, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to click package, which is going to build my SharePoint solution package, my WSP file. And let me show you how you can now get this thing deployed to SharePoint. The only thing that I need to do is I need to navigate to my site settings, where I can go to the solution gallery on the level of my site collection. And over there, it is possible to add a SharePoint solution. Oh, sorry, over here. Let's click on upload solution. And I'm just going to pick the solution that I just created. Sandbox demo. The WSP file. There we go. Solution has been uploaded. I'm going to activate it. There we go. And now if I navigate to my site settings, I need to activate my feature that provisions the web part. Where is the feature? Should be a feature. How did I call the feature? Sandbox demo, something like that. Oh, of course, I need to go to the site collection features, not the site features. Sandbox demo. It's already activated, that's good. So now if I go to my homepage, switch this page into edit mode, insert a new web part. My dummy web part, let's click add. And the first time that this web part is going to get displayed, it's going to take a couple of seconds because Sandbox Solutions is making use of a service behind the scenes that probably is not yet warmed up. There we go. As you can see, my dummy web part is executed. And to make it very clear, I've been able to deploy the SharePoint solution, including this web part, by just making use of the web user interface of SharePoint. And I have been able to do this by just making use of my site collection settings. I didn't need to go to SharePoint Central Administration. In my opinion, sandbox solutions will become very big, also in the context of hosted scenarios. If you don't run your SharePoint sites on-premise, but you have them hosted in the cloud, this is a great way to add customization to SharePoint without physical server access. Okay, a couple of more slides that we need to go through. What's new stuff related to upgrade and packaging? Well, as I said, we still have SharePoint solutions, so keep using them. Some enhancements to the concept of SharePoint solutions. We've got better ways to upgrade our customizations that we're packaging with our SharePoint solutions. We had some nasty issues in SharePoint 2007. If you build content type, for example, content types, package them into SharePoint solutions, it was not possible to get them upgraded by adding new columns, for example. We now have support for that because inside the SharePoint feature it is possible to declaratively specify what should happen when your feature in your solution gets upgraded. We will also have application discovery in SharePoint sites, probably we will have something like the SharePoint application store that you can connect to remotely to download solutions from trusted partners from Microsoft. And as I already mentioned a couple of times, SharePoint solutions are here to stay, so it's worthwhile to invest in them already in SharePoint 2007. To finish off, I can mention, of course, that because we've got that good support inside Visual Studio related to the templates that we can now make use of, we can also make use of the full application lifecycle management in Visual Studio 2010. We can integrate with source control, do work item tracking, builds on the server, making use of unit tests, that kind of stuff. Bottom line is that, well, your SharePoint code is now just normal code that can be plugged in into any application lifecycle management tool, as Visual Studio 2010, for example, can be. Okay, that concludes my talk about SharePoint 2010 as a developer platform. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope I've been able to show you SharePoint 2010 has quite a lot of offer for developers. And as you probably already noticed, I've only been able to touch on most of the subjects. There's much more to talk about, SharePoint 2010. Will really prove to be a great platform to build code for. So I don't know if there are any further questions.
Yes, there is one actually, about the sandboxed solutions. Mirko is asking if you do have admin rights to your server, mm-hmm. then what is best practice, the sandboxed solutions or not?
My approach would be, if it's possible to deploy as a sandboxed solution, deploy as a sandbox solution, and only if you would like to do certain customizations that are not supported in sandbox solutions, for example, an application page cannot be built into a sandbox solution, then fall back to the form solution type. But if possible, go for sandbox solutions.